50 Years of Saving Lives, the book. Narrated by Mike Fronczek.
We're continuing with our reading of Wisconsin Right to Life's 50th anniversary book, 50 Years of Saving Lives. And we're picking up closer to the end of Chapter 3 on page 71, where there's a headline, 1980s Advertising Campaigns. They're forgetting someone. Part of the organization's original stated purpose was to carry out statewide educational and legislative efforts in opposition to abortion, specifically to, quote, mobilize public opinion on the rights of the unborn, end quote. To accomplish this, very often Wisconsin citizens' concern for life, and later Wisconsin Right to Life, turned to newspaper advertising as a means to change public opinion. In 1984, a public awareness media campaign, They Are Forgetting Someone, was launched. The effort worked to educate the public by debunking a common pro-abortion theme, namely that abortion is a matter just between a woman and her doctor. The campaign reminded readers not to leave the life of the unborn infant out of the equation. Also featured on page 71, an ad called Sweet 16. In 1989, Wisconsin Right to Life commemorated the tragic Roe v. Wade ruling with a January 22nd abortion awareness ad. The ad, called She Could Have Been Sweet 16, was distributed across the state so chapters could place the ad in their local newspapers and tie in the campaign with their grassroots efforts to save lives. Now, on to page 72. Headline, Right to Life Leaders Lost. Late Friday night, October 19, 1984, brought tragic news from East Central Wisconsin. Right to Life leaders Fran O'Meara and Dave Dressler lost their lives in a plane crash. The two were on their way to lead a full day of training for Pregnancy Help Center volunteers in Spooner, Wisconsin. Their plane went down just north of Weyerhaeuser in Rusk County. Fran was director of volunteers and coordinator for pregnancy counseling services. Using her years of experience counseling women who were experiencing problems after abortion, she developed a unique and successful method of counseling. Quote, I've never met anyone who seemed to be as effective as she was in reaching out to people who were confused and hurting, said Dan Zeidler, Wisconsin Citizens Concern for Life executive director. Dave Dressler was president of Maryville Construction of Hazel Green and frequently offered to pilot his 6-passenger plane for Right to Life leaders in need of transportation. Partially disabled himself, Dave was dedicated to the pro-life movement, believing in the worth of each person. He always looked for ways to help other persons who lived with disabilities. And on the bottom of this page, milestones from 1985. In 1985, the membership of Wisconsin Citizens Concern for Life totaled 12,000, with 43 chapters established across the state. Increased activism meant 500 brave volunteers faced frigid temperatures for a January rally at the state Capitol building. John Glinsky, head of the Madison chapter of Wisconsin Citizens Concern for Life, told a UPI reporter that the temperature was 9 below zero with a wind chill of 53 below. And to get that kind of turnout is fantastic. Had we had halfway decent weather, we would have had 800 or 900 turnout for the rally. Legislative challenges. Taking over as legislative director in 1987, when Barbara Lyons left the post to become executive director of Wisconsin Right to Life, Susan Armacost brought both a carrot and a stick to the halls of the state capitol. She served in this capacity until her retirement in 2013. She told us about the challenges of moving right-to-life legislation through the Assembly and Senate and onto the governor's desk so bills could be signed into law. She wrote, "As representatives of women, the vulnerable of all ages and the unborn, it seemed our legislative efforts were always locked in a power struggle. The pro-abortion lobby and their allies in the legislature had always vigorously opposed the legislative work of Wisconsin Right to Life. But when the people of Wisconsin elected a pro-life governor, as well as a strong majority of pro-life legislators, abortion supporters knew the tide had turned in our favor. As a result, pro-abortion forces doubled down by waging all-out war on the numerous life-saving legislative proposals advanced by Wisconsin Right to Life and on the pro-life elected officials who supported those proposals. They were assisted by numerous segments of the media who cooperated with them in spreading outright lies about our pro-life legislative proposals and about the motives of the pro-life public officials who supported those proposals. Wisconsin Right to Life countered this onslaught by bringing the facts about our various legislative proposals to the general public and by defending the pro-life public officials who supported them. In the end, vital life-saving legislative proposals were passed by the legislature and signed into law by the governor." End quote. Having a powerful woman of influence like Sue Armacost lobbying for the Right to Life cause in Madison was a big advantage. Steve Brongen, writing for the left-leaning Madison publication The Isthmus, suggested that Armacost, quote, must be the most powerful non-elected figure in Wisconsin politics, end quote. Brongen referred to Wisconsin Right to Life as, quote, the big stick anti-abortion group that has an imposing record of success. Armacost is a tough, take-no-prisoners lobbyist. Some call her Sue Armageddon. The proof comes at election time. If a pro-life legislator steps out of line, there's hell to pay at the ballot box. Now that's power, end quote. Our 80s legislative agenda would ward off increasingly numerous attacks on our law banning abortion, State Statute S-940-04. We won passage of a 1985 law which clarified and strengthened 940-04, granting immunity from prosecution for pregnant women who have abortions, known as S-940.13. Pro-abortion forces have long used contrived talking points against Wisconsin's ban on abortion, saying it held penalties for women who abort. Passage of 940.13 effectively ended that debate, although the opposition continues to act and speak as though 940.13 doesn't exist. Abortion record-keeping mandated. Perhaps one of the most significant pro-life laws passed in the 80s was the Abortion Reporting Requirement Act, S69.186, which mandates annual reports from hospitals, clinics, and other facilities for each induced abortion performed. Then, the Wisconsin Department of Health and Family Services collects and reports specific information for each woman who obtains an abortion and publishes an annual demographic summary, protecting the identity of the women and the facilities. Wisconsin Right to Life was the lead organization promoting this measure. This law, passed in 1985 and taking effect with the first issued report in 1987, created a quantified abortion benchmark. This allows tracking the progress made in lowering the number of abortions from year to year. Our state was an early leader in passage of such abortion reporting laws. Since then, most other states have followed suit. passing laws or adding regulations which require abortion reporting. The exceptions are California, New Jersey, and New Hampshire. Maryland has not collected abortion data since 2006. Borking, always a bad thing. Further evidence that old-fashioned collegiality had been supplanted by tribalism was presented in 1987 when President Reagan nominated Justice Robert Bork to the U.S. Supreme Court. Justice Bork's nomination was defeated after a hotly contested debate in the U.S. Senate. As is often the case in the current era of divisiveness, nominees to the high court are litmus tested on abortion and how a justice might rule on it. Within 45 minutes of Robert Bork's nomination, Senator Ted Kennedy, Democrat, Massachusetts, strongly condemned Bork in a nationally televised speech, declaring, quote, "Robert Bork's America is a land in which women will be forced into back-alley abortions," end quote. The harsh, vitriolic onslaught against Justice Bork in the U.S. Senate later came to symbolize the left's reaction to any nominee who may pose a threat to the status of Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton. Such an extreme pro-abortion response was subsequently characterized as a verb by William Safire in the New York Times, who coined the phrase "borking a nominee." And now onto the top of page 75, where there's a photograph of Tommy Thompson. In 1986, Wisconsin Citizens Concerned for Life helped elect Wisconsin's first right-to-life governor, Tommy Thompson. We are grateful to the governor for standing with Wisconsin Right to Life in support of its public policy agenda, signing into law the life-saving legislation which landed on his desk. Tommy Thompson served as governor until 2001. That same year, Wisconsin Citizens Concerned for Life changed its name to Wisconsin Right to Life to more closely align itself with its chartering organization, the National Right to Life Committee, NRLC, based in Washington, D.C. Wisconsin Right to Life 1980s legislative accomplishments. 1981, determination of death. 1981, maternity coverage for dependent children. 1985, immunity for pregnant women who have an abortion. 1985, physician-only requirement. And 1986, abortion reporting requirement. The Education Fund. In 1975, the Wisconsin Citizens Concerned for Life Education Fund was established as a separate 501c3 financial entity to promote educational activities through tax-deductible contributions. By 1987, the activities of the Education Fund were substantial enough to require full-time leadership. Catherine Serrata Fraunfelder joined Wisconsin Right to Life as Education Fund Director, serving in that position for more than 20 years. Kathy told us, quote, "The Education Fund did many wonderful projects during my tenure, but two of them had the greatest impact: the publication of Life Cycle and our grant programs, one for pregnancy help centers and one to assist individual clients," end quote. National Right to Life asked Wisconsin Right to Life for help with producing new and revitalized issues of Life Cycle. "The first life cycle we did was about abortion," Kathy told us, explaining the procedures, physical and emotional aftermath, the rise in the numbers of abortions state and nationwide, and the reasons why women were aborting. It also identified what Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton really said and did. "This issue sold so quickly, we had to reprint it very shortly after its initial release." In the late 80s, Kathy told us, the concept of pregnancy help centers was new. Center volunteers were often the first people to meet with and talk with women considering abortion. Through accurate information, patience, and support offered by these volunteers, women were changing their minds about abortion. Some of the volunteers had suffered abortion themselves and were therefore able to offer more insight into its heartbreaking reality. As a testament to the growing numbers of help centers and their effectiveness, the abortion industry launched multiple attempts, statewide and nationally, to discredit and close these centers, but these efforts were rarely successful. Today, the tide has clearly turned. Reporting from 2015 indicates that pro-life centers now outnumber abortion clinics by a factor of 5-1. Emergency grants for pregnant women. The second Education Fund grant program provides emergency grants to qualifying women who might otherwise feel forced to choose abortion. Some mothers need to flee domestic abuse situations, which threaten both them and their unborn baby. Others face homelessness. Many times, just a few $100 can make the difference between life and death when money is needed for rent or utility bills. Kathy explained that, quote, grant requests made on behalf of an individual must come from a pregnancy help center. Any grant money issued would not go to the client, but directly to a provider, for example, to a landlord for rent due or to a doctor for needed medical care. Hundreds of lives have been saved since the Education Fund first made the emergency grant program available in the 1980s. Technology, 1980. Introduction of the Pac-Man arcade game. Just a blip on the screen of history? Well, not exactly. The 1980 introduction of the Pac-Man arcade game signaled that the ever-advancing march of technology would impact more than the miniaturization of calculators and the advent of home computers. The Right to Life cause would march forward, advancing in step with each newly introduced gadget, and not by coincidence either. For, as we will see, as electronic gaming inventions became more capable and more complex, so did medical electronics, ultimately creating a very clear window to the womb. Other technology developments during the 1980s included introduction of the compact disc or CD audio player, the Sony Walkman audio player, the video cassette player or VCR, the Atari 2600 gaming console, and the camcorder. The Wisconsin Right to Life Education Fund is stronger than ever, making a tremendous impact for life across our state. The Education Fund works to build a culture of life through emergency grants, the Life Camp Summer Camp Program, Life on Campus College Program, pro-life legislation and lobbying, and the Wisconsin Right to Life Education Fund itself, growing throughout the decades to save more and more lives. Page 81, the 80s, significant U.S. Supreme Court decisions. During the 80s, a number of U.S. Supreme Court cases of significance to the Right to Life movement were heard. Chief among them, the Webster decision of 1989, which gave states more power to restrict abortion and hinted that the High Court may be poised to overturn Roe v. Wade. Other significant cases included the following. In 1980, Harris v. McRae. The court upheld the Hyde Amendment, which restricted federal funding of abortion to cases where the mother's life was endangered, with rape and incest exceptions later added. The court said states could distinguish between abortion and other medical procedures because no other procedure involves the purposeful termination of a potential life. While the court insisted that a woman had a right to an abortion, the state was not required to fund the exercise of that right. 1980, Williams v. Baraz. States are not required to fund abortions that are not funded by the federal government, but can opt to do so. 1981, H.L. v. Matheson. Upholding a Utah statute, the court ruled that a state could require an abortionist to notify one of the minor girl's parents before performing an abortion without a judicial bypass. 1983, the city of Akron v. Akron Center for Reproductive Health. The court struck down an ordinance passed by the city of Akron requiring, one, that abortionists inform their clients of the medical risks of abortion, of fetal development, and of abortion alternatives. Two, a 24-hour waiting period after the first visit before obtaining an abortion. Three, that second and third trimester abortions be performed in hospitals. Four, one parent parental consent with no judicial bypass. And five, the humane and sanitary disposal of fetal remains. Later, the court reversed some of this ruling in Casey. 1983, Planned Parenthood Association of Kansas City v. Ashcroft. This ruling upheld a Missouri law requiring that post-viability abortions be attended by a second physician and that a pathology report be filed for each abortion. 1983, Simopolis v. Virginia. This ruling affirmed conviction of an abortionist for performing a second trimester abortion in an improperly licensed facility. 1986, Thornburg v. American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. This ruling struck down a Pennsylvania law requiring, one, that abortions inform their clients regarding fetal development and the medical risks of abortion, two, reporting of information about the mother and the unborn child for second and third trimester abortions, three, that the physician use the method of abortion most likely to preserve the life of a viable unborn child, and four, the attendance of a second physician in post-viability abortions. Later, the court reversed some of this ruling in Casey. 1989, Webster v. Reproductive Health Services, which upheld a Missouri statute prohibiting the use of public facilities or personnel for abortions and requiring abortionists to determine the viability of the unborn child after 20 weeks. Page 82 has a graphic at the top of the page with the headline, "I Hate Being Alone with My Thoughts," and the subheadline, "Heartache, Post-Abortive Regret."
It's a heartache, nothing but a heartache.
During the late 70s and early 80s, raspy-throated Welsh singer Bonnie Tyler sang a popular anthem to the pain of love gone wrong. "It's a Heartache" received lots of radio play, defining regret succinctly with the words, "It hits you when it's too late." Even today, jukeboxes and digital music services the world over play Tyler's tune for the millions who can relate to the raw angst of the lyrics. "It's a Heartache" is a classic reminder that while love can be wonderful, it can also fall apart, crashing and burning in a pile of heart-shredding sadness. Then, as now, failed relationships can lead to innocent babies losing their lives. Couples that made such a tragic decision often live the rest of their lives with deeply painful heartache. As an answer to women seeking help with post-abortive regret, support services like Project Rachel provide a path toward healing and forgiveness. Vicki Thorne began Project Rachel in Milwaukee, and after 25 years of service to post-abortive women, was publicly thanked by Wisconsin Right to Life Executive Director Barbara Lyons, who wrote, quote, "In 1984, Vicki Thorne took the post-abortion ministry to a new level by founding Project Rachel for the Catholic Archdiocese of Milwaukee. Thorne was haunted by the agony experienced by a high school friend who had an abortion. That, from what I saw of my friend, it was both a spiritual and a human wound that needed to be addressed. And as a church, with sacraments and the people who populate the church, we can take care of this," Thorne told the Catholic News Service. Thorne and her colleagues recognize that women who have abortions need to go through a normal grieving process as they have truly lost their children. On September 18, 2009, 300 people gathered to recognize the initially small Milwaukee project that has flourished into a worldwide ministry. The profound work involved in helping post-abortive women and men to find healing is bittersweet. It wouldn't be necessary without the millions of legal abortions each year in the U.S. alone. But the thousands of women who have been supported know that Project Rachel has changed their lives forever. Kudos and thanks to Vicki Thorne and her colleagues for making this work a reality. I am proud to call Vicki Thorne my friend." End quote. More information about the support services of Project Rachel can be found online at hopeafterabortion.com. In addition to being the foundress of Project Rachel, Vicki Thorne is the executive director of the National Office of Post-Abortion Reconciliation and Healing, located in Milwaukee. At the bottom of page 83, we have milestones from 1988. In 1988, Wisconsin Right to Life celebrated 20 years of life-saving work since its founding in 1968. At this important anniversary mark, the organization was growing by leaps and bounds, with membership reaching 27,000 households and with 51 chapters and 13 sub-chapters around the state. Also in 1988, Wisconsin Right to Life waged a grassroots effort to reach voters, helping to elect Right to Life President George H.W. Bush, 41. During 1989, President Bush vetoed legislation containing funding for some abortions under Medicaid in the District of Columbia and in foreign nations. Bush also extended the ban on research using fetal tissue. And another milestone, this one in 1989. The first Teens for Life groups were formed nationally by National Right to Life in 1985. And then by Wisconsin Right to Life in 1989. Julie Little, director of Wisconsin Teens for Life, wrote, quote, "We are the abortion generation, but we are fighting back. We are fighting for those who have gone before us, whom we will never have a chance to meet. And we are working to ensure that our children and our children's children have hope for the future." End quote. Each summer, hundreds of teens attend Life Camp leadership training sessions, learning basic and advanced right-to-life skills so they can mentor their peers and save lives. And finally, the last page in Chapter 3, page 85, we cover a story that comes to us from our friends Dave and Bonnie Obernberger. And the story is called "The Young Ones Delivered." You must have seen the young ones somewhere, the 2 1/2-inch long, perfect plastic models of an 11 to 12-week-old unborn baby have traveled the world over, all 4.5 million miles and still counting. The young ones were conceived back in 1983 by Dave and Bonnie Obernberger as an educational piece to inform people about the humanity of the unborn baby. The models were ready for distribution in 1984, 9 months later. With each model, a wallet-sized card was included describing the unborn baby's capabilities even at that young age, such as a beating heart, brainwaves, fingerprints, and all body systems present. The Obernbergers headed the Racine chapter of Wisconsin Right to Life for over 40 years and recently retired. The young ones were produced in Wisconsin and shipped from their home. They added an extra room to their home to handle the requests, and their two children, Scott and Rachel, handled packaging and shipping after school. The young ones continue to be available through the Heritage House, 919 South Main Street, Snowflake, Arizona, 85937, or by calling 1-800-858-3040, or by going to their website, hh76.org. Thanks to the Milwaukee chapter of Wisconsin Right to Life for the use of this article from their fall 2017 newsletter. When you visit the Heritage House website at hh76.org to purchase the young ones, take note of the wonderful comments posted at the site from pro-life people around the country who use this inexpensive but effective fetal model. You'll learn new ways to use them and share the Right to Life story. Below is one of the comments posted by Wisconsin Right to Life chapter leaders Peg and Warren Porter. Quote, "We use these at all our Right to Life events, fair booths, dinners, youth days at schools. It's a great way to show the truth that it's a baby. It's a great way to get the conversation going on the pro-life subject. The card with information is just right and basic enough for youth, but comprehensive enough and educational enough for the adults as well." End quote. And this ends Chapter 3 of our reading of Wisconsin Right to Life's 50th anniversary book, 50 Years of Saving Lives. Join us again next time as we move on to Chapter 4, The 90s.